Welcome to the second quarter 2015 earnings analyst call. My name is Lorraine, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Brad Alexander. Mr. Alexander, you may begin.
Thank you, Lorraine. Good morning, and welcome to FMC Technologies' second quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Our news release and financial statements issued yesterday can be found on our website. I would like to caution you with respect to any forward-looking statements made during this call. Although these forward-looking statements are based on our current expectations, beliefs, and assumptions regarding future developments and business conditions, they are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these statements. Known material factors that could cause our actual results to differ from our projected results are described in our 10-K, 10-Q, and other filings with the SEC. We wish to caution you not to place undue reliance on any forward-looking statements which speak only as of the date hereof. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any of our forward-looking statements after the date they are made, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to John Grimp, FMC Technologies Chairman and CEO.
Good morning. Welcome to our second quarter 2015 conference call. With me today are Mary Ann Seaman, our Chief Financial Officer, and Doug Pferdehirt, our President and Chief Operating Officer. I'll discuss highlights from the quarter. Mary Ann will provide specifics on our financial performance, and then we'll open up the call for your questions. Earnings were 46 cents per diluted share for the quarter. Total company quarterly revenue was $1.7 billion, and operating profit was $216 million. Quarterly revenue for Subsea Technologies was $1.2 billion, with margins of 14.8%. Our focus on execution and the strength of our backlog has continued to drive our strong margins. For the full year, we still expect Subsea margins of around 15%. Our activity levels remain near our record 2014 levels, but our full-year revenue will be down as a result of the strong U.S. dollar. Mary Ann will provide further detail on this currency impact. Our quarterly Subsea Technologies inbound totaled $1 billion, bringing our total for the first half of the year to $1.6 billion. We recently received the $297 million BP Shah Deniz Stage 2 project award for manifolds and controls in Azerbaijan. This is a second major award we've received from BP for this development. Our second quarter subsea orders also included awards for the long lead time materials for two large projects that we've been tracking. We expect full funding for these awards in the coming quarters. Second quarter value for each of these awards is relatively small, but the total value for each of these projects will be significant. Smaller project award activity increased sequentially, and subsea service activity remained strong during the quarter. With year-to-date subsea orders of $1.6 billion, we now have increased confidence in exceeding $3 billion of subsea awards. This is supported by the continued strength in our service activity, increasing small order inbound, and some large projects we expect to book before year-end. Our customers remain committed to developing their deepwater portfolios and continue to evaluate their offshore projects for upcoming development. Some of these are in advanced stages and are set to move forward with minimal changes to their original plans. The design and scope of many projects, however, are being significantly reworked to reduce costs and improve project economics. Operators are showing a willingness to accept alternative approaches to the traditional tendering process and are much more open to our vendor-based solutions. As offshore projects make up a large part of the future production of many operators, the achievement of improved project economics is imperative. Our Forces Subsea joint venture with Technip, which became operational in June, provides a meaningful and immediate step change in project economics. The initial response received from operators, both partners and non-partners alike, has exceeded our expectations. This includes IOCs, NOCs, and independent operators. The potential fields are in basins throughout the world, and the scope of the projects varies from tiebacks to greenfield developments. The rate at which our clients have identified projects in their portfolios as strong candidates for FEED and concept design using FORCE's subsea capabilities demonstrates the importance of this new approach. The pace and breadth of their commitment gives us confidence of at least one award in 2015 and that the first related EPCI award will come next year. In our surface technologies segment, revenue decreased 19% sequentially as we experienced significant declines in North America activity in the second quarter, consistent with the 35% sequential U.S. rig count decline and the impact of Canadian breakup. More than 1,000 rigs have come out of the market in the last three quarters. In response, customer spending reductions have been significant, and price reductions have had a greater impact on us than in prior down cycles. Our daily fluid control orders fell dramatically in the quarter. We do not expect material changes to this level in the third quarter, and it's unlikely we'll see much recovery before 2016. As we implement our integrated strategy for our North America business, we continue to consolidate many of our bases and rationalize our workforce to improve our overall operating effectiveness. Our surface wellhead business outside of North America continues to perform very well. We continue to forecast strong activity through the remainder of the year, but remain vigilant and will react swiftly should we see prolonged market weakness. Looking forward, the North America land market will remain challenged going into 2016. We're taking actions to consolidate many of our operations within this segment. These will make us a stronger, more integrated business with greater capabilities and a lower cost structure. We remain confident in our ability to deliver full-year subsea margins of around 15%. We will continue to right-size our subsea organization in line with our improved efficiencies and anticipated activity levels, while protecting our market leadership. Deepwater assets continue to be a significant part of many operators' portfolios. As project reevaluations move forward, new approaches are beginning to emerge that improve overall project economics. These are placing a greater reliance on vendor-based solutions and integrated field design and development. We expect this will help the positive order momentum that began in the second quarter continue through the second half of 2015 and into next year. Marianne will now take us through some of the financial details for the quarter.
Thanks, John. Before I review our operations, I'd like to note that our quarterly earnings results were negatively impacted by total company restructuring charges in the quarter of 3 cents per diluted share and an IRS tax settlement charge of 3 cents per diluted share. Our Subsea Technologies segment continues to deliver strong operating results. Excluding the impact of foreign currency translation, total revenue would have increased by $62 million year over year. Subsea Technologies operating profit of $184 million in the quarter. Excluding the impact of foreign currency translation, total operating profit would have increased $15 million year over year. Operating margins were 14.8%. We incurred restructuring cost of $5.4 million in the quarter. Excluding these costs, margins were 15.2%, a sequential improvement of 60 basis points from the first quarter. These results are driven by our solid execution of a strong project backlog and the continued strength of subsea service activity, despite weaker activity in the North Sea. Although our activity remains high, we were able to reduce further our subsea headcount during the quarter in areas where our internal standardization efforts have delivered efficiency improvements. In the coming quarters, workforce reductions will be more reflective of the anticipated decrease in future year activity due to delayed subsea project inbound. We anticipate an additional $15 to $20 million of charges in the second half of the year. Further headcount reductions will be made to support future activity levels. Given the international composition of subsea, we have experienced continued headwinds of the strong U.S. dollar. In the first half of 2015, the U.S. dollar is significantly stronger than currencies we have the greatest exposure to, NOK, Euro, and the Real. Subsea revenue for the first 6 months of 2015 includes a $251 million unfavorable impact of foreign currency translation. Excluding the impact of foreign currency translation, total revenue increased by $117 million year over year. Operating profit included a $35 million unfavorable impact of foreign currency translation. Excluding the impact of foreign currency translation, operating profit increased $52 million. Moving to Surface Technology results. Surface Technology's operating profit for the second quarter was $28 million, with a margin of 7.5%. In the quarter, we incurred restructuring costs of $2.8 million. Excluding these costs, margins were 8.3%. These results are reflective of the severe slowdown we are seeing in all of our North American land businesses. The sequential drop also includes the impact of Canadian breakup. We have now largely completed the planned headcount reductions associated with the lower activity levels. As John stated, we do not expect to see much recovery before next year. Therefore, our overall U.S. activity is likely to be lower in the second half of the year when compared with the first half. We expect some of this decline to be offset by improvement in our completion services business, which will benefit from increased activity in Canada as we come out of breakup. As we have been discussing, we are in the process of reducing our operating cost structure in North America while integrated related services on the pad. We expect these actions to continue throughout the remainder of the year and will result in further headcount reductions. These actions will reduce cost and improve our competitive position as market recovers. Our surface wellhead business outside of North America continued to perform well, primarily related to activity in the Middle East, offset by some volume decline in Europe. Segment backlog exiting the quarter stands at $467 million. This is predominantly surface wellhead business outside of North America. Energy infrastructure operating income for the second quarter was $5 million, with a margin of 5.2%. In the quarter, we incurred restructuring cost of $1.3 million. Excluding this cost, margins were 6.5%. We experienced sequential improvement in our loading systems business, but it was partially offset by weakness in our measurement solutions business due to slower activity. We expect segment margins to approach double digits in the back half of the year due to loading systems' continued improvement and somewhat higher activity levels from measurement. Let's turn to the corporate items. Corporate expense in the quarter was $14 million. We expect spending of approximately $15 million per quarter throughout 2015. Other revenue and expense net reflects expense of $30 million. The majority of the higher-than-forecast expense relates to foreign currency losses, primarily associated with the devaluation of the Angolan kwanza. Given the potential for future devaluation of the kwanza, it is possible we will incur further losses in the second half of the year. For the remainder of 2015, we expect other revenue and expense to be approximately $14 million per quarter of expense, with the potential for further foreign currency fluctuations, increasing that amount. Our second quarter tax rate was 34.1%. This includes a U.S. tax adjustment of $8 million, or 3 cents per diluted share, related to an IRS audit settlement for years 2007 through 2011. Excluding this, our tax rate would have been 29%. We continue to expect our 2015 full-year tax rate to be between 25 and 27%, which includes the U.S. tax audit settlement. Capital spending this quarter was $75 million. We expect capital spending in 2015 of approximately $250 million. At the end of the second quarter, we had net debt of $699 million. It was comprised of $587 million of cash and $1.3 billion of debt. We averaged 233 million diluted shares outstanding in the quarter, and we repurchased 1.5 million shares of stock during the second quarter at an average cost of $41.62 per share. Looking forward, energy infrastructure revenue will be down at least 20% year over year, with full-year margins in the mid to high single digits negatively impacted by the results in the first half of the year and slower activity in our measurement systems business. Surface Technologies revenue will be down at least 25% from last year due to reduced North America market activity and continued pricing pressure. Full-year operating margins should be approximately 12%, excluding severance cost. Subsea revenue for the full year should be approximately $4.8 billion. We continue to expect subsea margins of around 15% as service activity levels remain high and we continue to execute well on our backlog. The current market conditions are presenting a number of challenges to our near-term results. However, the strategies we are implementing across our businesses will result in long-term cost savings while preserving our capability to improve our execution as the market recovers. Operator, you may now open up the call for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And our first question comes from Jud Bailey from Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. I wanted to kind of follow up on subsea margins. Marianne, you mentioned that as your backlog starts to come down, you'll reduce your workforce appropriately. What other steps can you take as your backlog comes down to try to preserve margins in 2016?
Yeah, good morning. So maybe just a little bit of color before I completely address your question. You know, as we look back at prior cycles, this cycle looks very different than it has in the past. So, you know, first of all, we're coming off of a very solid, well-priced backlog in this cycle versus last. You know, you may remember during the last down cycle, we were in the process of actually growing our headcount to prepare for growth. In this cycle, actually, we've begun our reduction of workforce, heading into this cycle. So another positive. You've seen growth in our subsea services for the last several quarters. And then lastly, as we have demonstrated, our execution continues to improve. All of those things will work quite well for us. Standardization and all the internal work that we have done, if you will, to rationalize the workforce as well as standardize our own internal portfolio will help that as well. All of those things give us confidence in our ability to maintain those margins this year. Clearly, you know, next year we'll have some struggle at maintaining a 15% margin, obviously because of pricing. But we are very confident that we will not see the level of margin this cycle that we did last. So we will not see single-digit margins next cycle.
Okay. Is there a way to think about, as we look into next year, of all the moving parts, is to think about the magnitude of the margin deterioration, given all the factors you mentioned?
Yeah, so, you know, again, we're a little early stages, obviously, as we look at the next couple of quarters and the inbound orders that are coming in that will have some impact on it. But again, you know, we are not expecting single digit, I would tell you, kind of low double digit margins for 2016, is what we're looking at. A little bit difficult for us to sort of give you some quarterly rollout of that just yet. You know, keep in mind, you know, you remember always our first quarter versus our fourth quarter is always cycled down because of service levels. Does that help?
Thank you. And our next question comes from Bill Herbert from Simmons & Company. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Marianne, if we could stick on subsea margins here for a second and talk a little bit more about the glide path. 15% margin for this year, low double-digit margin for next year. Walk me through that again, because, I mean, I get the virtues with regard to well-priced backlog, right-sizing headcount, positive mix shift in subsea services, offset by perhaps operating leverage and pricing. Just strikes me that the latter two are going to have a disproportionate impact in 16 to arrive at a low double-digit margin. So can you amplify on that for me?
Yeah, sure. So Bill, keep in mind, we are still working off of a very solid backlog, right? So, you know, as we're going to be inbounding more price sensitive, the first, if you will, sort of 12 months of a project, we typically don't see, you know, much more than 10 to 15% of that roll through. So your comments are probably more impacting 2017 than they will be 2016. So we'll still be rolling off, you know, we started the year, with a pretty substantial backlog. So we'll still be rolling off a lot of that well-priced backlog into 16. Later in 2016 and beginning into 17 is when you'll really see the impact of that lower margin. And by then, we're quite hopeful that all of the additional cost structuring work that we're doing, all of the work within subsea and the internal standardization will help us offset that as well. So, you know, I think you can begin to talk about the end of 16, you know, seeing that challenge as we move into 17 with some of that newly priced inbound, given the pricing pressures.
Okay, so that makes more sense to me. So a low double-digit margin kind of in 17, somewhere in between 16. So that makes more sense to me. Secondly, John, if you could just talk a little bit more about, you've talked about this before, but I'd love to hear kind of a specific update with regard to your narrative on vendor-based solutions and the change in mindset on the part of your customer base. What anecdotes can you provide us on that front, please? Thank you.
Sure, Bill. We're seeing it really from two fronts. A lot of our partners and non-partners alike are engaged in discussions with us on how we can improve their project economics other than exclusively through price. And that's where we're able to push our standards, our new technology, and obviously the execution improvements that we've made. So those conversations are happening as just in the normal course, again, with partners and non-partners alike. The other obvious thing that's happening, and I'd like to ask Doug to give more specific commentary on the actual discussions, is the introduction of Forces. I mentioned in my prepared remarks that the reaction by partners, non-partners, large, small, independents, even NOCs, the reaction to the Forces concept has really exceeded our expectations. And so it's through that mechanism we're also seeing the operators engage with us on the ways that we can accelerate new technology adoption, drive standards, which has been a challenge for the industry, and then these new business models through Forces. So I'll ask Doug to talk. We've had a couple of really a very specific conversations with a whole variety of operators, particularly around the Forces concept, and I think that might illustrate the operator's reaction to change. Doug?
Thanks, John. Yeah, Bill, very interesting meetings that we've had as a result of the Forces Subsea announcement and introduction into the market. We closed in early June, and we're now out actively engaging with our clients. And as John said, it's a wide breadth of clients, both partners, non-partners, IOCs, NOCs, and independent operators. And as a result of that, we've entered into discussions deep within their organizations where they've actually assigned teams to work along our teams to look at ways to work differently. This means not only the subsea field architecture and the installation of that architecture, but also the way that we look at the life of the field and how we look at production over the life of the field, and therefore how we design the upfront equipment and how we introduce sensors and monitoring as a result of that. But what's really quite intriguing is we'll often go in prepared to talk about a particular project or a particular opportunity. And before the meeting's over, we've had on more than one occasion the customer introduce to us a portfolio of projects. And these are those projects that have been, if you will, on the cusp or just slightly outside of the project economics have been just outside of the threshold to move those projects forward. And they're now introducing that portfolio and saying, look, if this can work, we have multiple projects that we'd like to conduct under this manner. Now, this does mean a change of commercial behavior. And in any organization, there's resistance to changes to commercial behavior. But we're seeing a very quick and early uptake and a willingness to move forward and operate in a different manner.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Bill Sanchez from Howard Weil. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Bill.
My first question is just relating to the surface business. Marianne, you gave guidance here for margins for full year, averaging 12%, which is at the low end of the guidance you gave for, you know, in the first quarter call of 12 to 13%, yet you had a big step down in profitability in 2Q here. It's clearly, I think, worse than y'all's expectations at the time of the first quarter call. What's giving you guys the confidence now to see that kind of margin ramp in the back half of the year to get you back to almost even with what you guys thought 90 days ago?
Hey, Bill. So, you know, I think I mentioned in my comments, a lot of the headcount reductions in surface that we've been talking about have largely been made. We will continue to see the benefit of that in the back half of the year, along with beginning to see some of the benefits of the restructuring. We still have more work to do with respect to the integration of the pad that John has talked about as well, but we expect to get some benefit. So, you know, the absence of severance cost in the back half of the year and the benefit from the lower workforce, given we've taken out about 15% of that headcount in surface so far this year.
So just the timing was delayed in 2Q, Marianne, from when y'all expected to kind of get that benefit? Is that a fair way to think about it? I mean, this it doesn't look like then the margin decline was as structural as maybe one would think just looking at the release.
So, again, Bill, I think, first of all, the second quarter pricing pressure was a little bit worse than what we had expected. We think that will continue, but we do believe that the back half of the year we will have the benefit of all of the cost reduction initiatives that were taken. We moved more aggressively in the first half of the year than initially thought as we saw these actions happening.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Ole Slor from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. John, it's easy to understand that when you and Thierry meet with the C-level executives amongst your clients that they are very receptive for the concept of forces. But to what extent, can you elaborate a little bit more on to what extent you are seeing this being accepted lower down in the oil company organizations, because that's typically where you get the biggest resistance.
Thanks, Ole. Let me kind of hopefully not digress, but sort of set the stage. When you think of any industry, particularly our industry, attempting to go through a major step change in how we do business, it seems like it requires certain things. First of all, it requires, you know, the business imperative, which now we have, not just because of low oil prices, but because of declining returns. So there's a sense of urgency. There's a business imperative to make change. And we've talked about that before. It can't be incremental change to improve the returns. It has to be, they have to be significant, material, and they have to be sustainable. So the industry, it has that imperative because of the declining returns. The second, I think, important thing is that the solution that drives a step change, it has to be real, it has to be tangible, and it has to be compelling. And the Forces Subsea change in business model is very much that. And then thirdly, if you're going to make a step change, it has to be relatively simple to implement. Something that's compounded just complex and convoluted is going to be very difficult for an industry to make that kind of step change. And then finally, and this ultimately may be the most important thing, if you're asking an industry to go through, make a significant step change, it requires a leap of faith, and a leap of faith requires some level of trust. And so when I think of, when Terry and I and the team talk to operators, and again, as Doug described, it is the full range, and I was actually pretty surprised that of all oil companies, national oil companies, are even interested in that, but it's large, small. It's these four elements that end up in the conversation. It almost always ends up around trust. And you're right, given the relationships that we've built at all levels in the organization through our partnerships and non-partnerships, there's a great deal of trust there, and I think we're capitalizing on that as we have this conversation about how to make a step change. What is especially interesting, and Doug alluded to it, it's not uncommon when we approach an operator that very quickly we get beyond the interest and intrigue into this new concept, and fairly quickly, in the course of even the initial meeting, we're talking about specific projects, and as Doug said, we go from specific projects to the entire portfolio. What we've also seen happen, I think this was well, to the degree it's being adopted is unexpected, very quickly we go from the C-level conversation and the high-level directors to assigning a joint project team to pursue applying this concept to a likely candidate from their portfolio. So very quickly we're getting, and this is especially true of the smaller independents who don't have all those layers, very quickly we get to a project team with the operator joined with ours pursuing that with the direction from the C-level. So we've actually been pretty impressed, especially with smaller independents, even some that have been non-partners of ours, of how quickly they've been able to influence and convince the levels below them to seriously look at this concept. Now, a larger operator with many, many more levels, maybe a larger subsea organization that has to be convinced, I don't think we're naive. We know that it's going to take more of an effort. But one of the things that is different here, though, again, is even at sea level and below, they're going beyond the interest and intrigue, and they're naming projects. And I think that'll be one of the keys. But Doug, do you want to add to that based on your more specific experience in some of these conversations?
No, John pointed out, Ola, it's very, very positive in the not. It's not just the tone, and not just the interest in the concept, but it's actually standing up teams, engaging directly with the project teams. Because as you alluded to, there's often resistance between the sea level and the coal face when it comes time to implement change. This, you know, it's there. We're not naive. We recognize it's there, but there's been much less resistance than we had expected to experience. And even with the large operators, you know, we're sitting there talking about fields and, again, portfolios of opportunities that they're anxious to move forward now that there's a solution. And as John said, the commercial model, although it's different, because of the combination of our two companies and the breadth of our two companies and the offering and the simplicity in the commercial model, they're wanting to embrace that and taking the necessary actions to do so.
Okay. So when you now have a little bit further along here, could you give us an update on your thought process on overall cost reduction for an average, if there is such a thing, kind of mid-deep water field development? I mean, we had the pleasure of going through with some detail with Tore in Norway, and he made one specific example of a big West Africa project where there was a rather substantial project, but the cost saving on the subsea and installation, but I don't know if that was a unique situation. So what's your latest thought